Hi, my name is Dawn Hogan. I'm an author, and my favorite thing is Legos.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I am your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. This week, we are continuing a fall of meeting with authors and celebrating their book launches. And today I have Dawn Hogan with me. Dawn's first novel is being released in about a month. So today you will go and pre-order it and get ready to receive it in October. Her book is called Unbroken Bonds. And it traces the lifelong consequences of the naive indiscretions which thrust countless young women into ruined lives, the effects of which are still felt today. And it is about, I believe, the stories of adoption. We will talk more about it as we get into it. Dawn, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you, Leah?
I'm good. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
Me too.
Now, we're really going to get into the book at the end, but do you want to fix I was reading part of the synopsis off your website. Is there anything you'd like to, on one foot, a quick explanation of the book?
It's about four teenage girls that meet in a home for unwed mothers mm-hmm. in Knoxville, Tennessee in 1957. And through that experience, they bond into a lifelong friendship. Which during that time, they're keeping the secrets mm-hmm. of how they know each other.
Of course.
Because it was a really shameful thing. And, you know, as their lives go along and attitudes change and times change, and it's not such a shameful thing mm-hmm. to be an unwed mother.
Yep.
And eventually something bad happens. And they have to decide if they're going to keep their secrets or look for the children they were forced to give away.
Mm.
So.
That sounds like a really, I'm excited to get my hands on it this fall.
Well, it's so much about female friendship mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
Which, you know, women know that. Those close female friendships are the best.
Yeah.
They, you know, they are your support group.
Yeah.
So it's a lot about female friendship as well.
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding. Now, Dawn, before I hit record, you said you were a Chicago girl, that you grew up here before you moved. Where in the Chicagoland area did you grow up?
I was born in Chicago, and then when I was about six, my parents moved out to Streamwood. And mm-hmm. then when I was 14, we moved back into the city, into the old Irving Park area.
Okay.
So I went to Schurz High School, graduated mm-hmm. from Schurz. You know, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Being a teenager, growing up in the city. You know, because we could get on a bus or a train and mm-hmm. go anywhere we wanted, you know. Of course, Cub games were a lot cheaper back then.
Yeah. you could go without spending your entire year's allowance on one seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, Water Tower Place to go to the movies mm-hmm. or Marshall Fields and, you know. And then after I graduated from high school, I got a job at a law firm downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was riding the train in my gym shoes and then putting my heels on when I got to work. And
very Melanie Griffith working girl.
Well, yeah. Well, I was a clerk in a law mm-hmm. firm, but, you know, that was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I moved away from there when I was about 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't lived there since.
Oh, we lost you.
Yeah. Well, now I'm down in Alabama.
Yeah.
In Huntsville, Alabama, which I've been here since 1987.
Okay.
So I've lived here longer than anywhere I've ever lived.
Yeah.
And
is Huntsville where Auburn is?
No.
No.
No. No. Huntsville is the Rocket City. It's where Von Braun was.
Yeah.
Yes. This is Silicon Valley of the South.
Okay.
So we've got Boeing, we've got NASA, we've got huge tech companies. Mm-hmm. It has now just reached the biggest city population-wise in Alabama.
Wow. This year.
Yeah.
That's
so a lot of good things.
What's it like being in a city that's starting to boom or that's growing like that?
Like I said, I've been here for 30-something mm-hmm. years, and it always kind of had a small-town feel to it.
Yeah.
Traffic is a lot worse, but I try not to be out.
Right.
During rush hour or whatever, traffic is worse. And housing prices, you know, have gone through the roof.
Yeah.
Which is nice for us.
Right.
when you have a home that you're, mm-hmm. you know, you own. It's hard to say because we've all been in lockdown.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, we've grown during this time, which is phenomenal. But we really haven't been out that much.
Right. It is a weird feeling to emerge from my apartment sometimes and I'm like, oh, that's new. That's gone. That's, you know, a lot of like taking stock on like what has happened.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, some of our old mom and pop restaurants didn't make it through, you mm-hmm. know, where we used to love to go on Sunday mornings for breakfast.
Yeah.
Was just a little mom and pop place and they didn't make it. And yeah. that's so sad, you know, but then there's new restaurants that have come out during the pandemic
mm-hmm.
and they seem to be doing well. So
that's good.
I don't know.
What are some of your favorite places to either get a meal or go out for an evening in Huntsville?
We used to like to go to the movies. Mm-hmm. Of course, we haven't been to the movies now.
Yeah.
We've got some good restaurants here.
Yeah.
There's a little Mexican place around the corner, El Herradura, and it is, you know, privately owned. It's not a chain.
Mm-hmm.
Service is good. Food is fantastic. Margaritas out of this world. Mm. I mean,
which really, helps really. When it's around the corner.
Exactly. You don't have to go that
you don't
far.
Have to go that far. Maybe you can walk there. Or
they started out in one little storefront and went to expanded really quick.
Oh, that's
and they play music
cool.
on Friday nights and, you know, have either a keyboard or a little band playing. So that's mm-hmm. always fun. Barbecue. We've got some good barbecue.
Oh, I bet. Does Alabama have its own style or is it, because I know there's like North Carolina barbecue, there's West Texas barbecue. Does Alabama have a style or do you guys just enjoy the best of the region?
I think that it's just a Southern mm-hmm. barbecue, like a Memphis barbecue.
Yeah.
You got dry rub.
Yep.
I think it's probably more of a Memphis barbecue that is down here.
Nice. Yeah, we had for dinner last week, there's a new, it's called ATX Tacos. So it's like Austin Tacos, a few blocks away from my apartment. And we got some brisket from there last week and it was so good just to have just some smoked brisket that somebody else spent hours tending.
Well, our favorite date.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I during the pandemic was Saturday mornings going to the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
That was our big date for the week.
A romantic morning shopping for fruits and veg.
Well, and I absolutely blew his mind one day. And just to make the date more fun, we went through the car wash.
Don, you know how to plan a special morning.
I'm just telling you, I mm-hmm. am just a killer date.
Yeah.
What can I say?
How did you and your husband meet?
when I moved down to Huntsville, I was divorced like a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I met at the same company that we worked at.
Mm.
I was the receptionist and he was an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And he came down for a, I mean, we knew each other.
Yeah.
We, in fact, you know, on Friday nights, a group of us would go out to wherever happy hour was, and there was a band. And we'd gone out several times, but one day he came down to meet a customer and he was in a suit.
Uh-oh.
Yep. I'm that a sucker for a suit. That was it. That was it. So I told him how good he looked in a suit. And he said, we should have lunch one day.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay. So about a week later, when he hadn't asked me out to lunch, I picked up the phone and I said, did you want lunch to be totally your idea? Or did you want me to remind you that you said we should have lunch? After that, it was, that was it.
Yeah.
And we've been married 30 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank
you. And I saw, I think I saw on your website that you, for a while, the two of you owned a photography business together.
Yes. Yes. We were creative photography. Mm-hmm. And we shot over 400 weddings together.
Wow.
As a husband and wife team. Yeah.
That's a lot of weddings.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We shot Hasselblad's medium format and Nikon.
Yeah.
So we always backed each other up and it was really fun.
Yeah.
As to do that as a husband and wife team.
Mm-hmm.
And it meant a lot, I think, to a lot of the brides and grooms that the people that were supporting them
had a successful marriage of their
pictures
own.
We're a husband and wife team. And it was so much more than photography.
Mm-hmm.
We would show up and I'd walk into the bride's room and they'd go, oh, thank God you're here. My mother is driving me crazy, you know, or the bridesmaids need something to do and out of my way, or boutonnieres, we're missing a boutonniere. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to pull a flower out of one of the bridesmaids'
bouquets,
bouquets, and we're going to make a boutonniere.
Oh, you know, wow.
It was, yeah, I mean, it was so much more than that. And then later, a lot of times I would go up to the hospital and take their first baby pictures and then photograph their families as they do. So it was a really neat experience.
It's like you get to, through being a part of their wedding, you become like a surrogate aunt and uncle to the family.
Right. The aunt that takes pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a lot of fun doing that. It came to the place where digital came in and, you know, everybody with a digital camera thought they were a photographer.
Right.
You know, and it got to the point where people were coming in and going, well, why is your stuff so expensive and blah, blah, blah. It's like, we've done this for 15 years. We know what we're doing.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
we have a reputation. And at that point, my husband got a job. I managed the studio and he was an engineer.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would work together on the weekends, but I did all the studio work.
Mm-hmm.
So he got a job where he was, as he puts it, he went from engineering to sales and he went to the dark side.
Yeah.
So he had to travel a lot and it just got to the place where it was not feasible anymore to try to do that. And when you're not having fun anymore.
Right. Yeah. Time to move on.
Right. He'd come home and I'm like, we've got a rehearsal dinner tomorrow night. And he's like, I'm like, okay. You know, it's time to let it go.
Yeah.
So, and then I got to concentrate on what I really loved doing, and that was writing.
Yeah. how long did you work on this book from first idea to maybe to your to finding to getting to your agent?
That book was a long time in coming. It was the second book I wrote. And I put it out there and I got a drawer full of thank you very much, but it's not what we're looking for at this time. And I put it away. And it wasn't until 2 years ago that I pulled it back out at a writer's retreat. And then I was asked to be in a competition. So we're talking about, it was over 10 years.
Yeah. Now I told you, like, we'll talk about the book at the end. Apparently I was lying. We'll talk about it again at the end. How about that? Do you feel like the, because it is about adoption and sealed adoptions, do you think that that like 23andMe and Ancestry.com has changed people's appetite for talking about these types of family secrets?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The way this book started was my roommate, when I was divorced, a very good close friend of mine, came to me with her unsealed adoption records from the state of Tennessee. I'm such a geek. I just love research. And so she asked me if I would help her locate her birth mother. And so the more I dug into her story, her mother had gone to a home for unwed mothers in Nashville. And the more I dug into it, the more fascinated I was. And then the more appalled I was. Because when you're talking about the 1950s, the attitude was so different about unwed mothers. That was the worst thing a girl could do. Was to get pregnant as a teenager or unwed. And it was a secret. They would shuttle them off to these homes for unwed mothers and take away their names. I mean, they changed their names when they went into that home so that they would have anonymity when they got out. And they pressured the girls to put the babies up for adoption because if they truly cared about their child, they would give it a better life and not subject it to poverty and being called a bastard. The times were so different. I, you know, I'd heard of homes for unwed mothers. But I had no clue how bad it actually was. And when I heard the numbers, between 1950 and 1980, 1.5 million girls went through those homes. 1.5 million? Yes.
That is truly shocking to me.
And the majority of them gave the babies up for adoption. And were pressured to do so. Now, I've been in contact with Concerned United Birth Parents and Adoptees Connect and a lot of these different groups. The numbers go as high as 4 million. When you start talking about gray market and black market babies during that time, the numbers go as high as 4 million. That's a lot of people.
It's a lot.
And 19 states right now still have their adoption record sealed. People, like you said, people are getting around it with, you know, 23andMe and things like that, and finding their birth parents or birth families and then leading to that. But when I was researching all this, I was just like, oh my gosh, I've got to write a book. I've got to take these stories and put them in a fictional format, because that will reach a wide number of people.
Right.
If it's fiction, I think it will reach more people.
Yeah.
And I read everything I could get my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Saunders, Wake Up Little Susie, Ann Fessler's The Girls That Went Away, you know, was on the internet researching all these different stories from these women. You know, I really did my research, and I wanted my characters to reflect the experiences of these girls and what these homes were like.
Mm-hmm.
And the aftermath.
Yeah, because you're just supposed to like go back home and just have been away for a year.
Yeah. I mean, they told them, you go home and act like nothing ever happened.
Right. Just repress it.
And they
just
didn't have counseling.
Of course not.
They didn't have counseling.
No.
The aftermath of that, where so many girls got into abusive relationships because they didn't think they deserved anything better.
Right.
Alcohol abuse, drug abuse, suicide, you know, just always feeling like there was something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And always afraid that that secret was going to catch up with them.
Right.
So that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
I did find my friend's mother about a week. I actually found her sister and talked to her sister, gave her all the information, and she didn't want anything to do with her.
Yeah.
So that was, to me, that was sad. And I think part of writing the book, I used her mother's story and I changed the narrative.
Yeah. You gave your friend the outcome she wanted.
I made
you were like a fairy godmother.
Well, in fiction.
Yeah.
I made her a much more caring individual.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting ride, especially, you know, with everything that's going on. You know, you look at the 1950s and 60s and women didn't have any kind of rights.
Right. Yeah.
As far as their own bodies went, you know, birth control was only given to women if you were married. Up until really the 70s, birth control was not accessible.
Right.
If you were a single woman. And, you know, we're facing a lot of weird things right now. I just think that we need to remember a time when women were put in a position where they didn't have power.
Yeah.
Over their own bodies, over their own reproduction. And we don't ever want to get to the place where birth control, and I'm just talking actual, you know, I'm not talking abortion, I'm talking birth control, is hard for a woman to get.
Right.
And it seems like we're kind of spiraling that way right now.
Yeah.
It's scary to me.
Yeah, it is scary. I do think it's, I saw a movie now probably, oh gosh, maybe 3 years ago now. It was called Birthright, and it was a film about women's access to healthcare. And part of it focused on, so part of it was about access to abortion, but part of it was about what happens when your county and the adjacent counties only have Catholic healthcare.
Exactly.
And when you can't get a tubal ligation, you can't access the birth control you want because all of the whole healthcare system is tied up with the Catholic Church, even if you're not somebody who is Catholic. And that to me was really eye-opening because, right, I live in Chicago. I happen to have had my hysterectomy at a Catholic church, at a Catholic hospital. But my doctor did all the paperwork she needed to do to prove that as a single childless woman, Like, it was still medically necessary, and she protected me from any pushback she might have gotten from that hospital's administration. But that was coming from a place of incredible privilege, with good health insurance, with an education, right?
Exactly. If you look at, say, rural or underserved communities, you take away Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
They do so much more.
They do so much.
We're talking cancer screenings, healthcare, birth control pills, whatever device, prenatal. There is so much that they do that is being rejected and just blanketed by this one issue, which I have four grown children. I've never had an abortion. I've never needed one. But I would not ever take the right away from some other woman who feels that that is her option. Nor would I say to the pro-life people that they're not entitled to their opinion. And bravo that you have strong beliefs.
Right.
But if that's how you feel, don't have an abortion.
Right.
Don't allow your daughter to have an abortion. But don't tell somebody else what they should do.
Yeah.
That's, you know, all right. That's my soapbox.
It's a outstanding soapbox. I'm glad that you got on it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel right now that we don't need to go backwards. There will still be abortions. But they will be back alley. They will be dangerous. And women will die.
Yeah, I think that there have been... We just have such short memories. And for all sorts of things in this country. And I think that's what... I think even a lot of women my age... I'm 44. So I've always been in a post-Roe world.
Right. Exactly.
So I've always known that it was
taken for granted.
Taken for granted. If people lose, the more and more access to healthcare that people lose, because women and people that can't afford, you know, for whatever reason, that pregnancy is not part of their life plan, they will do what they can, or more women will be coerced into staying pregnant, giving the baby up for adoption, and what you saw in your research for the book will pick up, you know,
of young
women being coerced into keeping a pregnancy and then giving birth and still having their life go off track a bit. You know, it's a really,
and I think part of the issue at this point is, you know, I was born in 1960. Okay. Even when I was in high school, there were girls that were pregnant that were in the school. And it was kind of like, oh, wow, you know, it became more and more accepted. Now, I'm 60 years old and I am in the place where I don't remember when I didn't have access to birth control, where I didn't have options. It hasn't been in my adult life that we were in the situation of the 1950s and 60s.
Right.
Okay. And the people coming up and young women today do not realize the severity of what it was like and what it can be, because the homes for unwed mothers were so secretive.
Yeah. And
the things that happened, there are women that have gone to their graves with this secret. And young women today don't realize there was a stigma involved with all this. They don't remember a time when they were denied the right to choose what they do with their own reproductive health.
Right.
So it's kind of, I don't want young women today to be blasé about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I want them to be educated. I want them to fight for their rights so that we don't go back to a time when women's rights are decided arbitrarily by somebody who doesn't have a uterus.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's something, and we also need to teach our young men.
Absolutely.
That this impacts them too.
Yes.
Right. That it's not something you walk away from. It's not something that it's, you know, also their responsibility, and their lives are impacted too.
Speaking of someone who has some boys, you know, we drilled it into them.
Yeah.
You know, you think you love this girl? Oh my gosh. There's a real fine line between love and hate if she turns up pregnant.
Right.
You know, and you have to step up. That's a life changing event for not being responsible.
Yeah.
You know, so far so good, knock on wood.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I think they get it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, boys have been around me enough to hear me spouting about
right.
it.
I'm sure they're like, mom, we know, we get it.
Well,
all of our friends get it, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so. I mean, you have to look at, in the last 20 years, the rate of teenage pregnancy has gone down.
Yeah, it's really plummeted.
And this is a very positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have to see teenage girls having back alley abortions.
Right.
Because they weren't ready to be mothers.
Right.
And it was an oops.
Right.
There you go.
And I do think, though, you know, in my family, we have, so like 3 or 4 years ago, we met a half sister through 23andMe. Who my dad didn't know about. She was 52 when we found her, and it has been such a blessing to have her in our life. It's really been just like a remarkable positive, like the best possible outcome, I think, of one of these 23andMe stories has been what has happened to her family. But we did uncover other stories in our family that, you know, I have a great aunt who took some stuff to her grave. Right. That as things turned up in the genetic reports that didn't match our paper understanding of the family, she was like, well, we're done talking about that, you know. But I think as people have some of those conversations with their extended family, because every family has got secrets turning up somewhere, I do think that helps people understand. Hopefully they can learn from their families and looking at the generations that came before them to understand what the stigma was like, to learn that this, you know, a beloved aunt would hold a story to her grave.
Right. Right. So. Well, and I think that, and I hope that my book does open up some conversations.
Yeah.
Because I was in a clinical setting that, I mean, I've gone there for years and years, and this lady and I have always exchanged books with each other, always talking about our, you know, favorite one we're reading now, and this and that. And, you know, she knew I was a writer, and I told her, you know, I've got a contract, I'm publishing this book, and I told her what it was about. And I've known her for years. And she looked me dead in the eyes and she said, I went away to a home for unwed mothers when I was 15 in Nashville. I've never told anyone.
Wow.
When she said that, it was like, oh my God. it gave her the freedom to finally say, that happened to me.
Right. It must have just been a weight lifted to be able to share that secret.
Well, and since then, she's told me some of her experiences, and I was kind of in the last edit of the book, and I put some of the things that she told me.
She added some color.
I added some personal things that she went through into the book, because at that point I felt I owed it to her.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she told me this and she'd never told anyone.
Yeah.
Wow. And I mean, she went home and her parents never spoke to her about it.
It's just like she was like abducted by an alien ship for a year. Oh, you're back. Wonderful to see you. And Tommy was in the school play.
She said it wasn't until like 5 years ago, her mother had already passed away, that her dad actually brought it up and said, do you regret giving the baby up?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I can't imagine going through that and coming home to my parents and them never saying a word about it.
Right. Because your parents are the people who know what it is to have brought life into the world and raised someone. And they're the people that know what you have given up.
They should be your soft place to land.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be able to cry with them and say, oh my gosh, you know, I gave birth to this child and I'm never going to see it again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't even imagine.
Well, Don, I'm intrigued. I'm sure our listeners are as well. Unbroken Bonds October 19th is your publishing date, right?
No, it's October 5th.
October 5th, even better.
October 5th it comes out. It's on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
Great.
And they have Kindle versions as well for those that like it on their tablet.
Yeah.
I think people will really like it for... The title Unbroken Bonds talks about the friendship of these four girls, but it also talks about the bond of the children that they gave away, that even though they weren't there, they were in their thoughts all the time. And the children always wondered as well.
Yeah.
So there's a bond that is appropriate.
Yeah. Well, Don, we're also here to talk about
my favorite things.
Your favorite things. Clearly, it is so clear to me that writing and research and telling stories is one of your favorites. But you also have over your shoulder bookshelves. Yes. That are filled with a cityscape that are all made out of Lego.
Legos. I am a Lego maniac.
Yeah.
There is no doubt about it. I mean, when my kids were little, we bought Legos for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
There was always a new set coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when they were little, mom had to help them because, you know, they're six and it's, you know, nine and above for this kit. So we would, you know, work with the Legos together and, you know, we were always buying more and more Legos. Well, and when my husband got the job where he was traveling a lot, it was like, all right, dad's not going to be home this weekend. We're going to have a Lego weekend.
Ooh.
So that meant, you know, we set up a big table in the living room. We'd get out all the Legos. We'd build a farm. We'd build a castle. We'd build, you know, an empire, whatever. You know, some of these things had elevators. I mean, we'd eat pizza, you know.
Yeah.
And we didn't worry about the Legos on the floor.
Right.
You know, and we would just have total Lego weekends. When they came out with these exclusive sets, mm-hmm. that was what I wanted for Mother's Day.
Mm.
So for Mother's Day, I would get one of these and we would sit down as a family and we'd build mom's new Lego set. Now, these mm-hmm. do not go into the bins with the rest of the Legos. Once they are built, they are built.
They are built.
Not. No, but don't touch.
No harvesting.
Nope, nope.
Your
no pieces off of these. Mm-hmm. These are mom's.
Yeah.
So for years we've done that where it's been Mother's Day, it's Legos. Mm-hmm. It was so funny that the year that I got my publishing contract, mm-hmm. they came out with a bookstore. So I got that one for my birthday.
Oh, good. Yeah. They knew the assignment.
Yeah. Now, when my granddaughter was born, my first granddaughter, mm-hmm. My daughter lived up in Wisconsin at the time, and I went up there for her baby shower, through her baby shower. And I made sure that in her bassinet, there was a little Lego kit. Mm-hmm. So she was born with Legos in her bassinet, and she is my Lego granddaughter.
Yeah.
I mean, she and I have a bench here in my office that's kind of a window seat. Mm-hmm. And right now it's got like a countertop on it because they were here in July and Grammy brings down her Legos.
Yeah.
We just make a big mess and we play Legos. Whoa.
Oh, that's so
while
fun.
They're here. And it was so funny. My husband and I had the chance to go to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking down this thing of shops and there was a Lego shop.
Mm.
A Lego store.
Yeah.
And that was the first one we'd ever been in. And my son Andrew had wanted the Lego chess set.
Ooh, I've never seen that.
Yeah, there's a Lego chess set and you couldn't get it in the United States. Mm. So we went into this German shop. They did not understand what we were saying. But I was like, chess, king, queen.
Uh-huh.
Checkmate. Oh, checkmate. Okay, Lego set. Chess set.
Right.
They brought it out. You never saw two Americans go so nuts in a German shop in your life that we found this Lego set for him in Germany and brought it home.
Oh, you won the souvenir.
Oh, yeah.
The souvenir yeah. game that trip.
Yeah, we did. It was like, I can't believe you found it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think they're the best toy
yeah.
ever made. Because you can make anything.
Yeah. Well, and especially with your creative, I mean, you're a writer, but also with the photography, such a visual eye, your husband's an engineer. Those are two skill sets that, I mean, what I love about Lego is, other than they're like, the tactile experience is perfect, right? The generic Legos, the off-brand Legos are not.
No, you don't mix them.
Yeah.
Don't mix them.
They're really, whatever you can imagine in your head, your only limitation is the number of bricks in the Tupperware, right? In the Rubbermaid bin?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but there is a thing online called Lego Designer.
Ooh.
That you can download.
Oh, so you do you design what you want to make online
exactly.
and then you export the directions?
You actually can do a thing with directions and send it to Lego and they will send you the bricks.
Oh.
It's the one I've got is not connected online,
mm-hmm.
But you can take all the different blocks, change the colors, as far as what you want them to be. And, you know, my thing is I love building like Victorian houses with them and using the hinges where you can open it up and see inside and all that. But yeah, you, and the great thing about doing it online is you're not going to step on them in the middle of the night.
What do you have any nightmares from stepping on the bricks when the kids were little?
Yeah, but it was usually my fault. So, you know, I mean, I encouraged the whole Lego thing.
Yeah.
My husband, on the other hand, was not that happy when he would step on them.
Right.
And, you know, but they're the best creative kind of thing. As far as if you dream it, you can build it. And I mean, I'm just that kind of a person. I'm like totally right brain.
Yeah.
Completely right brain. I mean, if I do a project or if I can see it in my mind, I can make it.
Yeah.
And my engineer husband, I'll tell him, well, honey, you know, this is what I'm saying. And I'll try to explain it. And he's like, I can't see it. I'm like, but you don't get it. I can see it.
Right.
I can see it in my mind.
Yeah.
So just trust me.
It's going to get there.
He knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, okay, I trust you. Go.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am completely right brain. and that's probably why I love Lego so much.
Yeah. So behind you, it is all buildings, right?
Yes. It's like a
village,
street.
I've got, like a main street.
Yeah. I've got a movie theater. I've got an emporium. I've got a pet shop.
Yeah.
And there's two townhouses that went with like the pet shop and the bookstore. Oh, and I have a fire house.
Ooh, that's the red one on the
over
here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And the garage door opens up and there's a little fire engine. It's so cute.
Oh my gosh.
Now I don't have all of them, but if you notice, I could take a board.
Yeah.
And put across there.
Yeah.
And I could do at least five more.
Yep.
I told my husband that.
What did he say?
It's like, do you know how much money is sitting on those shelves right now? I'm like, yeah, so. Yeah.
There are so few people out there, so few people who even 3 months later can put their hands on their Mother's Day gifts. You know where yours are.
I do.
Yeah.
Woe to anyone who takes a piece off of there. You know, my kids love Legos. And as they've grown up and moved out, they understand that Legos don't leave the house.
They're welcome to start their own collections.
Well, they're welcome to bring their children over here and play.
Oh, even better.
Legos stay here for the grandkids. And I love my granddaughter's like, you're my Lego Grammy. I'm like, yeah. You're my Lego granddaughter.
Oh, that's so sweet. How old is she?
She's 8. She'll be 8.
Such
December.
A fun age.
Yeah. And you know, and she's gotten to the place where she's really good at being able to follow directions and put it together herself. So she's at that age where she's finally being able to get a kit. And it's like, no, don't touch. I can do it.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's fun to watch her as she's developed. Because I bought her own, of course, Lego sets. They have the Lego Friends now.
Right.
And they're kind of, the people are kind of bigger. They're not your standard, you know, squat little square Lego guys. And it's more designed for girls.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning, Legos were generic. And then they started being more for boys. And then they figured out really quick, oh, wait, girls like Legos too.
Yeah.
So they started incorporating like Lego friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she really likes the Lego friends. So yeah. She's got several kits of those. But yeah, I'm a total Lego geek.
What are some buildings or kits that you have on your wish list?
Ooh, there's more Lego exclusives that I haven't gotten. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. They've come out with a new police station, I think. And there's other ones that were from the past that if I'm not careful, I won't be able to get them.
Oh.
They get to hard to find.
Yeah.
And then you can't find them. But I do want to get, and I can't find it, is the Legos from Big Bang Theory.
Oh, of like their apartments?
Yeah. It's Sheldon and Leonard's apartment. Mm-hmm. And I love Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
It's just great writing. So funny. And because I've lived with an engineer and actually worked in, you know, that kind of environment. Yeah. It's so true. Mm-hmm. And so funny. And they have a kit for Big Bang, but I haven't been able to find it. Mm-hmm. And they just came out with one from Seinfeld.
Oh. That's smart. The licensing agreements with the TV station, with like the networks it's smart.
Well, and they have them for, what is that? Kids like that cube game.
Minecraft. Yeah,
exactly. They have Minecraft. They've got Harry Potter,
mm-hmm.
Batman, you know, so many of the franchise stuff they've brought in to catch the kids,
mm-hmm.
with different movies or whatever that they like.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like the town stuff because mm-hmm. most of it is kind of the Victorian feel.
Yeah. I guess a Lego kit is more manageable and you could always like have it, like pick it up and move it, you know, or keep it in a room without cats. There are some options there.
Well, they're divided usually in, you know, when you're building something, they're divided in compartments of a,
oh, okay. Know,
in a, of a box where
right.
you kind of have them separated out. So yeah, they're movable. What I got into during COVID, my daughter moved from Wisconsin mm-hmm. down to Indiana, which okay. I'm so glad because it's so much closer.
So much closer. Oh my gosh.
They bought a place and redid the kitchen. I mean, just ripped it out and redid the kitchen. And mm-hmm. she wanted to do it with sunflowers in her kitchen. Yeah. So I did her a counted cross stitch.
Ooh.
From sunflowers. Now, I hadn't done counted cross stitch in years.
Yeah.
And I remembered why.
But you stuck it out.
Well, and the thing was, I found that 3 times magnification reading mm-hmm. glasses and large eyed needles made this a much funner experience.
Okay. Yep.
Because I had done them years ago. And then I got on doing counted cross stitch of Victorian houses.
Oh.
And those I'm not giving away.
No.
I went online and found these on Etsy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can see that.
Oh.
So I started doing them for myself.
Nice.
You know, it's like you can't go anywhere. So.
Right. Oh, that's beautiful.
And it's a Debbie Patrick is the gal who has done the patterns on eBay. And they're just dimensional. I mean, they're so cool. But.
Oh, my goodness. I love that one. So it's a blue house. It's like 3 stories tall with a witch's peak.
Yeah. It's in San Francisco.
Okay.
So she's taken actual homes and done these patterns of these Victorian houses. I'd love to have a Victorian house, but they're so expensive and the upkeep's ridiculous.
The upkeep is intense. Yeah. Yeah.
So I just make my house look like a Victorian house with gingerbread on the front.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. But yeah, I mean, I loved doing that kind of stuff during the pandemic because it was like, all right, you know, I'm editing this book. I'm working on getting it out. And when I need to just chill and get away from that for a while, I need something else that my brain can think about.
Yeah. And it's two, between the counter cross stitch and the Legos, it's two hobbies that are not about the screen, right? They're you're doing them with your hands. They're very physical. They're tactile. And it's a good, although I guess maybe your pattern might be on the screen, but it helps, I imagine.
Well, it's with like Etsy, you just print them off.
Oh, yeah.
And then tape them together and then go to Hobby Lobby and get your thread.
Nice.
In the colors that she recommended.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, and again, it's kind of little blocks because it's canon cross stitch.
Yep. I'm seeing a theme. So, Dawn, your book, Unbroken Bonds, comes out on October 5th. People can, it'll be listed under D.W. Hogan, which is your book name, out which it'll be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, print, print, digital. Any plans of an audiobook?
I don't know. I'll have to talk to my publisher about that. We'll see how that goes. I hope so.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really think that it's a really touching read about the relationships in one's life.
Yep.
And some not so good, you know, and some very good. And I'm fortunate enough that I'm going to have an in-person book launch.
That's so exciting. That's the October 19th I had in my head.
On October 19th is my book launch, and I'm doing it at the historical Lowry House here in Huntsville. It's an 1832 house. And I'm doing it with a local bookstore called Snail on the Wall. And so, I mean, we're going to make it nice. You know, we'll have some book readings. We'll do book signings. We'll have 50s music playing and hors d'oeuvres and, you know, sparkling cider. And, you know, just make it fun. So big celebration.
The big celebration that you deserve at the end of you know, 17-year career of writing, getting this first one out in the world is, it's such an accomplishment. It truly is.
It really feels big. And the exciting thing is I got lots more books.
Great.
This is the first one and I don't intend on stopping anytime soon. I love to write. And for years I did NaNoWriMo. And I don't know if you know what that is. It's
the
National
November
Novel Writing Month.
Yes.
And, you know, the premise is that you write 50,000 words from November 1st until the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea is if you do something for 30 days consistently, it makes a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows you you can do it.
Yeah.
And I've done it for years.
Yeah.
You know, I've told my family, you know, even when they were younger, it's like, okay, it's November, I'm writing, there's stuff in the refrigerator, work it out, unless the house is on fire or there's copious amounts of blood,
right?
Leave me alone, I'm writing.
I'll see you on Thanksgiving, but otherwise, I'm writing.
Yeah, so I trained them well, so now that it's come to, oh gosh, mom's a published author, it's
right.
Like, now they understand all the times that I'm going, I'm writing, go away.
Oh, fantastic. But the book launch, in-person book launch, October 19th at the historic Lowry House in Huntsville, Alabama. So people can see you there. They can find you dwhogan.com. You've got D.W. Hogan Author on Facebook.
Yes, ma'am.
And Dawn Hogan Author on Instagram as well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, this has been fun.
This is super fun.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.